Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
All right, are we ready?
My levels are up. No, talking about the recording levels, Reginald.
So now what are you telling me?
That the we've got a problem with the music. There's some odd hum going on. Okay, see, we're not going to use any music. No music bed for the beginning or the end. Okay. All right, I think we can get through this. This will be fun. It'll be interesting. I'll explain when the podcast officially starts. And how will you tell the difference? Usually this is the part where you and I are talking, and then the whole big production starts with the music and everything. This will be interesting. Episode 159, which this is going to be one of those trivia questions one day, huh? Okay. Well, let's do this. I'm having fun now. We're on the edge. We're living on the edge here in podcast land, okay? It's going to be easy from your standpoint, right? You've already hit your button. You have nothing else to do now. Reggie, just sit back and eat your Subway. Okay. It's all on me now, so I'll do it. Now I really have to say my three S's. Star, smile, and strong. Okay, let's do this as if there is music, and then we'll see what happens. Okay, you ready? 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, right here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new episode is posted for your podcasting pleasure. I have officially got word that this is now a podcast rated, good housekeeping seal of approval. We are binge worthy. Let's just put it that way. We are binge worthy. And if you want to be binge worthy, go to WGNplus.com, hit the prompt for Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and you will find all previous 158 episodes, which means that this is episode 159. Well, if you have noticed, if you are a regular listener to the podcast, you have noticed something, I would assume, I would hope. Where's the music? Where's the Bitches Back theme? Well, I don't know. I was told just before we went on that there was some kind of technical snafu, and there was some kind of a hum, a bad hum, which, I don't know, is an oxymoron. Can a hum ever be good? But there was a hum, and it really made the sound muffled. And so we decided, Reggie, my producer here, the powers that be, said it might be best not to even have the music because it would sound muffled and way in the background. And in fact, we had to call an audible and not have Emily Arminetti on with us today, because that same cord or whatever is humming would have brought her audio, and she's not in the studio with me when I record this, and so her voice may have sound muffled and far back as well, and so we didn't want to have that happen. So hopefully we will get this little technical difficulty fixed up before the next podcast. But this does now once again add a new wrinkle, a new piece of the legend, if you will, to the Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic catalog, because now episode 159 will be known as the naked episode, where there were no musical beds. And by that, it's a technical term, I know, folks. In the music and radio business, a musical bed is that music that you hear behind the announcer or the presenter, if you were in Britain. Whenever you play music underneath someone talking in the business, in the radio biz, they call that a bed because, obviously, the voice is resting on the music, right? Our bed is broken. We don't have a bed. Someone stole our bed. I have to call Casper Bed or or CERTA. We have no beds today. Yes, sir, we have no beds. But that's fine. Hopefully I will. It's only at the beginning and the end, right? And I just got, so now you heard what the opening sounds like without the music. So it's a little insight. I do it live. I play the music. So I just tried, you know, while I'm talking over it, I don't do it separately. We don't add it or dub it over. But so now you heard what that would sound like without the music. And I think you'll agree. Well, I'm sure that you are very impressed with the tone of my voice. I think you'll agree that the music does add a little oomph. So don't worry. We're not going to be doing the naked version every podcast. But we had to call an audible here. Sometimes technology, while it is amazing and it does brighten our lives, sometimes we have to work around when it doesn't work. So that's what we're doing today. I hope you haven't turned off the podcast now that the 1 minute and 25 seconds or so of music at the beginning is not there. But it is missed. And as I said, now we've got a new trivia question. Some people may remember that I believe it's episode 109 was never posted. That's just a little more trivia. I think it was episode 109, wasn't it? If you're a regular podcast listener, maybe you know that trivia question. But there is a missing episode. It's the lost episode. There is one lost episode. While we are at a count now of 159, only 158 have in fact been posted. There is a missing episode that one day may show up. We don't know why it's missing, or do we? And now we have a new wrinkle in the legend that is the Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Not only is there a missing episode, there was an episode that didn't have any music on it. That may be a trivia question on Jeopardy one day. I could just hear the host, you know, in 25 years. The world-renowned Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic had a snafu during one of its podcasts. What number podcast did not have any music when it started? Yes. What is episode 159? Correct. And that was a daily double. Very good. No. So, onward and upward. Here we go with the podcast. The Naked Podcast, if you will. Episode 159. Write that one down, folks. If a diehard, you'll want to know that. What I wanted to talk about today really came to me on a recent trip. I recently went to Colorado, and if you're on my Facebook page, you saw some of the pictures. I love Colorado. I have loved it for about the last 22 years. I first was introduced to Colorado on a business-related trip. I worked for a public relations firm, one of the bigger ones in the world, actually. It's called Hill & Knowlton. And I went there on a work retreat type of event. I was invited to attend this event for about 4 days, and it was very nice. And it was held in the Vail area in a resort called Beaver Creek, which is right near Vail in the town of Avon in Colorado, right in the mountains. And just gorgeous, unbelievably gorgeous. I may have told the story. I'm not sure if I have or not. But when we landed, there's a small airport outside of Vail called Eagle Airport, and it's situated right between, you know, some mountains. It's a very small airport. Big planes really can't even land there. Real big ones, at least. And when we landed, it's one of those airports that's so small, you actually, when the door opens, you walk down the stairs and you're right on the tarmac. And so it was a gorgeous summer day, and the door opened, and I walked out just like the Beatles. Although there weren't thousands of screaming women and teenage girls when I stepped off. But so you step off. It's always kind of cool when you do that. You feel like the president, you know, when the door opens and you walk down those stairs. And so I walked down, and I was just struck. I was just awestruck with how gorgeous the Rocky Mountains were and how gorgeous this area was. And everywhere I looked, there was another postcard. I was just literally in awe. My jaw was dropped. I just was turning around and looking, and everywhere was gorgeous and so much. And I stood there for like 5 minutes, to the point where one of the attendants at the airport thought I was looking for my luggage. And he said, "Sir, you know, your luggage is over here." It's such a small airport. You didn't have a baggage return. You just took your luggage off of the plane. He said, "Well, sir, if you're looking for your luggage, it's right over here." And I said, "No, you don't understand. I'm from Chicago. Yes, we have skyscrapers, but ours are man-made. Your skyscrapers are naturally made, and my gosh, are they gorgeous," meaning those mountains. And I said, "Wow, I'm just, you know, I come from flatlands, and this is a way too much for me to take in with just one glance." And I fell in love with the area, and I've gone back many, many times over the last 20-some years. And so I went back again, and it was everything I want it to be. It was just the scenery is beautiful, the serenity is great, and there's just a nice, very chill vibe there. And I just love it. I don't know what it's like to live there in the winter. In fact, I got a piece of that. I've been there in the winter a few times to ski. What was interesting, we went there at the end of May, and our first day there, it snowed about 3 or 4 inches. I mean, real snow, like heavy, thick snow. And then the next morning, we wake up, and it was 60 degrees, blue skies, and while there was certainly snow up on the peaks, where there always will be for a long time, all that snow had melted. We had the best of both worlds in terms of the Colorado experience. We had the first day was snow-filled, and I got some beautiful pictures. And the next day was a gorgeous late spring day with a completely blue sky. The mountains were glowing, and it was just pristine. It was perfect. In fact, I went back. I took some pictures on the first day, and I went back the next day when all the snow was melted and stood in the same spot and got pictures of the same scenery without the snow, for the juxtaposition to say, no, this was not taken one at Christmas and one today. This was taken on Thursday and Friday. And that's kind of the joke there up in the Vail area there, that if you don't like the weather, just wait 10 minutes. And we got certainly a dose of that. But it was gorgeous and it was really nice. We weren't gone for very long, 2 or 3 days, but it was nice just to get away and soak up the serenity and the mountain air and, as I said, the beautiful scenery. And one of the things that we saw on the trip on the way back to Denver, we flew into Denver and then drove in to Vail. It's about two and a half hours out of Denver. No, folks, I did not drive. If you know me, you know I cannot drive in the mountains. I did it once. Once. No, we had someone drive us. I couldn't do it. I can't do it, but I have to get there. And if I can't fly into the Vail airport, there were no flights for some reason, then I have to find other ways to get there, because I can't drive without into the mountains, and especially so many times. There are no guardrails. Where are the guardrails in Colorado? I've said many times, I could be elected governor of Colorado on the guardrail proposition. No turn in my state will not have a guardrail. But anyway, there's a music venue just outside of Denver, about 10 miles or so outside of Denver. And it's called Red Rocks. And there's a lot of Red Rocks. There are Red Rocks in Arizona as well. And if you've seen these natural rock formations out in deserts and in places like that, where there's mountains, these beautiful kind of copper, well, not even, no, they're like orange, you know, rocks in these formations that have formed over millions, you know, 200 million years or something. And there is a venue just outside of Denver in a town called Morrison, Colorado, called Red Rocks. And I was not aware of this venue for many years. I was kind of young, but I first came to it because in 1981, just as the group U2 was beginning to ascend, they were a relatively unknown band, but they played at Red Rocks, and they filmed this concert. And it was really it's still one of the best, most legendary shows at Red Rocks. In fact, when you go to the venue, they have a Hall of Fame and they have a museum. And the U2 performance in 1981 is in that Hall of Fame because it was so noteworthy. It was noteworthy because, A, it poured throughout the whole concert, which gave the show something of a different kind of personality from the outset. It was at the very early stages of U2's career, so they were young and you know, energetic and gutsy and ambitious and fearless, and you could see that in their performance. And Bono is carrying a flag and walking up, and what I want to tell you about the actual venue, it's built within the rocks, within this rock formation, this gorgeous red rock formation. So that's how I even heard about Red Rocks. There is a video called Under a Blood Red Sky, you know, and it's U2 at Red Rocks. And I never, you know, so I saw the video, and then it was kind of like, wow. You know, it was live at Red Rocks, U2 live at Red Rocks, Under a Blood Red Sky. And it was just a very cool, now that I'm thinking about it, it was in 83, I'm sorry, I said 81, it was in 83. Yeah, now that I'm thinking about it. But once again, it was right as they were beginning to become well known. And so that's how I became acquainted with Red Rocks. And I saw that and I said, boy, that would really be cool to see a concert there. And I've always wanted to go there. I never have. And so finally, we were on our way back and I said, you know, I heard from a friend that, because usually you'd have to go see a concert. Like a few years ago, we went to Los Angeles because I always wanted to visit the Hollywood Bowl. And so we saw Rod Stewart there, not necessarily because I'm a huge Rod Stewart fan, but we were in Los Angeles at that time and he was there. And so I said, I've always wanted to go. I have to start seeing some of these things that I've always wanted to see. So we went to the concert there. There wasn't anybody I wanted to see at this point at the Red Rocks, but I was told by a friend that they actually open the amphitheater in the morning to the public. And you can just go on a self-guided tour or a guided tour of the amphitheater and the museum and everything. And then you get about 1 o'clock or so, they start to close things down to get ready for the show that night. But it's open from sometime in the morning until at least noon, which is pretty cool. And then because it is built in this rock, you know, right outside, it's an outdoor theater, no covering or anything. You're just out there in the elements. There's no pavilion. There's no covered pavilion here. It's just rocks and nature. It's very steep, and there's, you know, 70 rows, you know, that are, you know, in a ascending, you know, the theater is at the bottom and the seats go up. So it's great to do workouts. So one of the byproducts of this is when you go for this self-guided tour, you just walk, you know, you have to drive up. It's right off of 70, the main road, in Morrison, Colorado. And you find people of all types, either climbing the stairs, going up and down all the rows. There were some groups that were actually doing group exercises together on on all the stairs and on the different seats. It's all bench seating. So that was kind of interesting. I didn't see, but my gosh, what a gorgeous, beautiful view It overlooks then this whole terrain of the Rockies. You're kind of in a valley there. And you're in between these two giant red rocks, these natural red rock formations that were just, they're just there. They've been there for 200 million years, apparently. And someone had the foresight to look at this and say, wouldn't this be a great place for a concert? Because of the natural acoustics. And that's where the whole thing started. I guess there was a man named John Brisbane Walker. And he saw the red rocks and thought, and apparently Indian tribes used to live there and they would chant, and there was just these perfect acoustics. And so this gentleman said, wow, listen to the acoustics out here. Wouldn't it be amazing to build a theater? And so, I mean, you know, he actually produced some shows using a temporary platform in between these two giant rocks that were there. And there were some, like, opera singers of the day that came and performed there, like, between 1906 and, like, 1910. Could you imagine that? They had to get there by burro, by donkey. That's how they got to this spot. These musicians recorded there, and people came to see them. But the real goal was to have an entertainment venue that can handle people and have a real stage, not just some little platform. But when you go to the museum, you see these musicians and singers of that day on this bad little wooden platform. But all of them, and they've got quotes from all these people, are just extolling the virtues and the amazing acoustics that they were experiencing within this Red Rock area. And so, as luck would have it, in the 20s then, about, you know, 15 years later, a man named George Cranmer, who was the head of the Denver Parks, convinced the city of Denver to buy the area from this Walker gentleman, who wanted to build this theater, but never really could afford it. And they decided to, you know, based upon what this Walker gentleman had at least begun in some idea or form, to construct this amphitheater. And it took many, I mean, what did it say? In 1927 is when they first bought it. And it became, they started to build it in 1936, and it was finally opened in 1941. So, wow, look at that. I mean, almost, you know, 30 years from when this person had this one idea until it actually became a reality. But I'll tell you, when I walked in, and it's been many years I've wanted to go there, so it was very exciting for me, even though there wasn't a concert going on, just to walk in here and see the natural beauty. And like I said, that's one reason why I love going to Colorado anyway. And to see this, and at night, I would love to go there at night and really see a concert because they light the rocks up. And I've seen photos of it, and it's very dramatic. It's got to be just a great, great experience to hear this great acoustical venue, and then look at it as well. And as I said, there's a Hall of Fame, and a lot of people have performed there that you would certainly know. One thing that I learned when I went there to the Hall of Fame is that the Beatles played there. In 1964, on their first tour, the Beatles played at Red Rocks, and it is noted because it was the only show on their inaugural American tour in 1964 Their first U.S. tour in 1964. The show at Red Rocks was the first one not to have a sellout. Now, they showed pictures of the venue that night, and folks were pretty jammed in, but apparently they said it wasn't sold out. And, you know, the Grateful Dead played there many, many times. It became one of their kind of quote-unquote, you know, home places. And there's been people like, you know, John Denver and everybody. In fact, what's really cool, they have a whole wall. And they show every year and the acts that have played there. Now, of course, I had some interest because Elton John did play there in 1982. I did not see him there. Bruce Springsteen has played there. I did not see him there either. So I'd certainly like to see one of those two play there, but I don't know if they will anymore. But it was really cool to see this theater built, and especially when you, as I said, you went to this museum and they showed how this whole thing got, thought of and then actually made. And when you see these two giant rocks and what had to be done to build this stadium, because as I said, this venue, because it is down, they had to dig and just remove, you know, tons of rock. It was flat. But there were these two giant rocks standing amongst out in the, just out in the landscape. And someone said, wow, that would be cool and pretty. And listen to the acoustics here. So they dug down. So as I said, when you enter, you're standing next to these two giant rocks on either side, these beautiful red rocks. And the stage is down. So they had to dig the bowl out. And then, as I said, it's an amazing view of the area and everything else. They have this museum, so it's a cool place just to visit. It's got to be an amazing place to see a concert. I'd love to hear the acoustics. The funny thing is, when you see the first kind of people that sang there were opera singers, because that was the music of the day. And there was a quote from some singer that said, I'm sure that I can envision one day 20,000 people here listening to the classics. Well, I don't know if she would have, she was right about the 20,000 people. I don't know if she would consider what the classics were, because, you know, she was expecting Verdi and Puccini. And as I said, now you had John Denver and Earth, Wind & Fire and the Beatles and Bruce Springsteen and Blues Traveler and the Grateful Dead. I don't know if those were the kind of classics she was talking about. But aside from just the personal interest in music and the musical venue and this historic kind of place, what really got me thinking was, wow. I mean, somebody came out here, looked at these rocks, looked at this formation, and instead of just saying to himself, wow, that's pretty, and moving on, there was this other vision that he had and said, the acoustics here are perfect. This would be a perfect place to create an amphitheater. And if you know your history, going back to the Greek and Roman times, that's where they had outdoor theaters. That's where the theater experience started. And in fact, according to the information, there is a Greek theater in Sicily, Italy, where the idea or the concept of the way Red Rocks is constructed came from this ancient outdoor Greek theater that was built in Sicily in, 200 BC or something. So, once again, it's the ability of some people to have this vision. And then, thankfully, that vision is nurtured and financially supported. And we have this wonderful, breathtaking theater out in the middle of nowhere, and then suddenly there's this place where people can gather and in you know, in a communal way and enjoy some great music in this acoustically perfect arena. And so as I was walking through this, and I was just really taken by the fact of the ambition and the vision of this that these people had, whether it was the first person who saw it, the city of Denver, and the way they took it and then made it into a reality, and they stayed with it. As I said, this was an idea that happened in the early 1900s and didn't come to fruition until 1941, but there was a commitment and a vision to get this done. And now we have this gorgeous thing that if these people didn't have that vision, didn't have that commitment, didn't want to do this, it would just be a rock formation instead of this unique place to gather and appreciate music as well as the scenery, nature. It's really a nice marriage of music and the environment, music and our history of this earth, when you think about it. And it made me think about the great ambition and the great vision that in the early 20th century just abounded in the world and in this country. When you think about some of the achievements that we have made in terms of these physical, tangible places, you know, skyscrapers, Eiffel Towers, you know, Hoover Dam, all these kind of places that, and these things that were built over the last 100 years or so, 150 years. And the early 20th century was really a time of great, great ambition and accomplishment. And a drive to build something and to leave a mark and to do the impossible. If you've ever been to, you know, Mount Rushmore, amazing. I mean, it's an amazing achievement. When you see it in person, you really can't believe it. You have to go to see Mount Rushmore. But my gosh, the years it took and the dedication and the stubbornness, but the drive and the ambition was there to once again look at the at a rock formation and say, I can see carving four presidential faces there. What? You know how many people looked at those rocks before and didn't see that? But this person did. Same thing here. You know how many times people went through those rocks? Yeah, they're impressive, massive rock formation, but only one person thought about making a musical venue there. And it made me think about today. I mean, we still have great ambitions, and we create, and now we certainly have the tools. Think about what they had to do back in the 1930s to build this, to move all that. Now we have these amazing trucks and these amazing machines. But when you go to Mount Rushmore, a lot of this stuff was jackhammered by just guys with jackhammers and explosives blowing all this rock out. And these guys, as I said, they had to build the Red Rocks Theater. They had to move so much rock and land. You know, not only was it an ambitious achievement, but it would seem an insurmountable achievement. When I drive through the mountains in Colorado, while I'm afraid to drive on the roads because they're scary, I'm still in awe of the fact, who built these roads? Who dug out these roads? Sometimes I curse them because they scare the hell out of me. But what an achievement that was. Once again, the vision of some of these people to build and to figure out how we're going to build roads, connecting roads through these mountain terrain. Incredible stuff. And this year, of course, we are celebrating in July another monumental 20th century achievement, which is akin to what I'm talking about here, the bigness of the ambition of July of 1969. We will be celebrating the first man on the moon, 50th year anniversary. My gosh, what an audacious and ambitious undertaking that was. And you look at, as I said, the formation of the railroads in this country in the 20th century. The 20th century was just brimming with opportunity. Not only was there opportunity, but there were people that matched that opportunity with their vision, with their ambition, with their drive to create and leave something in when they were gone, but do it for the greater good. All of these things that they did, this theater, this Red Rocks Theater, for the enjoyment for people for years to come. The people that came up with the idea and built it are long gone. But we today are benefiting from their work and their creative vision and their creative drive and their devotion and dedication to making this real. We can go to Mount Rushmore and look at something like that and appreciate it. It's for the ages. And that was the mindset at that time. Even the going to the moon. We don't live on the moon yet. Maybe we never will. And who knows? We seem to have lost our ambition to go out in space like that. But the audacity to think we could, that is the human spirit. And that legacy still remains. That there are footprints up on the moon. Human footprints. Those were left there for us and for the generations to come. That, yes, that man did conquer space. Big, big goals and dreams and accomplishments that were insurmountable and yet became realities. And that's what I was thinking about when I'm walking through Red Rocks. This was just another one of those things that, thank God for those, for these people that had this vision and had that devotion and that they stuck to it and made it a reality. And now we are able to enjoy it instead of just looking at it as a piece of scenery of which it was, natural scenery. We turned it into something that we can enjoy communally, people coming together. And I wonder, now in the 21st century, have we lost that drive or ambition of making things big and audacious and seemingly impossible? Now, the argument would be, Jim, what are you talking about? Look at how, just in the last 15 years or so, and certainly look at the last 30, when you look at the rise of the computer and the rise of technology and how it has completely reformed our culture. In the last 30 years, and certainly the iPhone, the smartphone, has changed our behaviors in only the last 10 or 12 years. I understand that. There's no question. Look at the way movies have changed thanks to the computer. Everything has changed thanks to the computer. There's no question. People thought it was a glorified calculator back in the 70s. Well, we turned out we've learned a lot more than that, of what the computer's possibilities are. And every day it continues to expand. But I'm just kind of disappointed or wondering or worried, how do, or how does technology compare with some of these amazing projects and monuments that we built to not only function like the Hoover Dam, which we needed, but also either pieces of public art like Mount Rushmore or this Red Rocks venue? Do we have that kind of ambition to build those kind of things anymore? You know, we haven't gone to the moon in 50 years. Have we lost our wanderlust? Have we shortened our vision and our views and our creativity? I mean, before there was no computer, right? There was no iPhone. So the people with creative vision and boldness and ambition, they left their marks on the world, in the world, literally on the world, with these amazing, tangible, physical projects. As I said, Mount Rushmore, this Red Rocks thing, these amazing feats of engineering and artistry and architecture, as well as I said, creativity, ambition. There's so much that goes into these things. And they're there, and we look at the skyscrapers. I live here in Chicago. You walk down, and you see these amazing buildings, and you say, that was somebody's vision. And we're still building buildings. That's probably our biggest kind of fulfillment of what I'm talking about. But look at what's going on not far from Mount Rushmore. They're trying to build another rock formation to commemorate the Native American. But that it's all based on donations. It's moving very slow. It's been going on for several decades, and it's not even close to completion. I mean, think about, I don't know the exact timeline, but Mount Rushmore, for what it is, was put up in a relatively short period of time. John F. Kennedy, in 1961, I believe, made the audacious claim that we will go to the moon before the end of the decade. We will go to the moon before the end of the decade. I love that. Instead of decade, the decade. But, wow. Not like, hey, wouldn't it be cool if someday we went? No, we're getting there before the end of the decade. That's ballsy. Not only were these things done, not only were they visualized or thought about, but they were completed. I don't know if we have that. Or do we still have that kind of drive of ambition? Yes, there's no doubt. As I said before, technology has moved our culture and our world in areas and ways that we never expected, and it is fast. But you know, when you look at when I was looking at this Red Rocks, I couldn't help but, you know, in the 20th century, the beginning of the 20th century, people looked at their world. They looked at this, meaning the world, this, and they wanted to change it, the physical parts. Now all we look at is this, and I'm looking at my hand as if I'm holding an iPhone or a smartphone. All we're interested in is apps today, it seems. What kind of app can I create? What kind of viral, intangible technology can I create? I'm not saying that these aren't noteworthy innovations, and many things have made our lives much easier and better. I'm not down on technology. I have always said, I think a lot of today's technology is done because we can rather than we need it. Well, just because we can. But when I look at some of the amazing kind of ambitions as I said, it's just audacity to think, well, I'm going to build a theater in the middle of these two giant rocks out here in the middle of nowhere in 1924 or 1906. Do you know what the landscape of the United States looked like in 1904? Do you know what that area around Denver was in 1904? And somebody saw this rock formation in 1906 or whatever it was and said, I think I'd like to have singers sing here. This is acoustically perfect. Wow. I wish we'd get back to that. As I said, I'm not down on technology, but that's all we're worried about is what this little, this handheld device can help do for us or can just do in general. Isn't this cool? I don't know. Is it or not? But man, when you walk into this Red Rocks amphitheater in Morrison, Colorado, you are in awe not only of the nature that is surrounding you, because this venue and the way it's designed celebrates the natural formations and the nature that is around you. It makes you look at it and it makes you appreciate it and it takes your breath away. And then it has a function of offering you the chance to get together with people and enjoy music while you're appreciating the natural aspect of this amphitheater that's in the middle of nowhere, that's suddenly literally carved out of the rocks, is this breathtaking musical venue. It's those kinds of projects that I don't think we're thinking about today. All you see in the news is about infrastructure, right? That's all the big talk right now, infrastructure. Our entire country is crumbling. Our highways and bridges and airports and rails and everything and are all crumbling. That's not ambition. That's upkeep. We can't even do the upkeep. And 100 years ago, these people were just reaching for the stars, literally, reaching for the moon, looking at nothing and seeing something, and not just thinking about it, but doing it. And I just wonder, do we still have that drive to leave our mark on the physicality of our environment, not just intellectually, but physically? There is something to be said for that. I've been lucky enough to travel around the world, and I have seen some of the greatest historic sites that we have. I've seen the Colosseum, and I've seen the Acropolis in Greece, and I've seen, like I said, the Colosseum in Rome, and the Forum in Rome, and all these other I've seen Mount Everest. I mean, so I've seen Mount Rushmore, and things like that. And you say, wow, these were not just here. I've seen the Grand Canyon. That's nature's work. Not bad either. But wow, to have seen some of these man-made structures is awe-inspiring when you see how old they are. I definitely want to see the pyramids. My gosh, what kind of vision, ingenuity, engineering went on in these primitive times? We can't even fix our highways with the equipment and technology that we have today. We don't have the drive to get to pass an infrastructure bill. This should have been done 20 years ago. We can't even fix our roads. And 100 years ago, these people were creating, these amazing structures for their own legacy as well as the legacy and the enjoyment for future generations. So what I'm trying to say here, folks, is we got to stop just looking down. Let's look out and up. We're so worried about the latest app, the latest video game that keeps us isolated and within ourselves. There's nothing wrong with that. But the way this civilization became great was by the boldness to do big things. Daniel Burnham said, never make any small plans. We're all worried about how to make this smartphone stronger and better, but are we missing something out? Are we missing out on something? Are we putting our intellectual firepower into the wrong directions? There are so many things that we might be able to do and create if we looked out as opposed to looking down at a smartphone. If we lifted our heads up and looked into the distance or looked up to the sky like we used to 100 years ago. Instead of this, I'm looking at my iPhone and my imaginary iPhone in my hand again. Instead of looking at this and saying how, we need to look at this, the world around us, and say how. Because that's what's going to be something to aspire to. To be visited, to be shared by people in a real, tangible way. That's how we can leave our mark. People in the last century left their mark here for us. What are we leaving for the next 100 years or 200 years? What mark are we going to leave? CGI movies? Candy Crush? Uber? Are you going to compare Uber to Mount Rushmore? Candy Crush to the Hoover Dam? I don't know, folks. All I can tell you is there are so many amazing structures and amazing projects that you can see in the world. I hope that you go out and see them. Not just pictures. But go and see them and experience them and sit there amongst it and look around and take it in and realize that someone that they were, that where you're standing is the result of someone's vision and someone's ambition and someone's dedication. And hopefully that inspires some people for the future to look out and up. And say, I wonder. That's what made this country great in the last 100 years. That's what's made our civilization great over the last thousands of years. I'm hoping our intelligence is there. And our drive and ambition is there. But our focus, I don't know if our focus is in the right place. We need to help people, but we need to be audacious in our dreams and our goals. And I think that you go to Red Rocks, or you go to some place like the Acropolis, or you go someplace like the Colosseum, or you see Mount Rushmore, you can't help but be impressed and look around and say, what are we going to leave for generations? Those past generations left us with some amazing examples of who they were and what they were and how they were. And I'm just wondering, as I look around, what are we leaving? Grand Theft Auto? Fortnite? Candy Crush? Doesn't seem to match what came before us. Isn't that our goal? To be here and to leave something and to leave this place better than it was before we got here? I'm not down on technology, but the technology could make us make amazing things that are tangible and touchable, as opposed to something that lives in a binary world that you can hold in your hand. Yes, the iPhone is an amazing, the smartphone is an amazing accomplishment. But when you stand in the middle of Red Rocks and see the accomplishment that happened there, it doesn't add up. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new episode is posted for your pleasure. We thank you for downloading, scrolling, clicking, whatever it is that you do to find us on a weekly basis. Your loyalty is much, much, much appreciated. You'll notice that I have no music behind me again as we end the podcast. I hope we will be able to correct that. But right now, welcome, or I hope you enjoyed episode 159, The Naked Issue, The Naked Episode. No music at the top, no music at the end, just my voice. I'm Jim Tirano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. Thank you for listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, the only podcast from the end of the web to your screen.